It's 8:15 now. Good morning. Well, with the Sundance Film Festival in town, the Utah Film Commission spending some time here in Park City in the studio to tell us why and how that organization's presence is helping fulfill their mission. I have the director of the Utah Film Commission, Virginia Pierce. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why don't we first just talk to us a little bit about the Utah Film Commission. I mean, what it is, how you're funded, your mission.
So the Utah Film Commission is a state agency, and we really serve to market the state of Utah for production, and we do that both outside of Utah and inside of Utah, so we encourage both local and out-of-state productions. We focus on, you know, helping people hire Utahns, helping people, you know, use local businesses, for anything from, you know, transportation to casting services.
So your funding then is based from the state legislature every year?
Right. So we have an appropriation. Well, we have an ongoing statute that provides a little over $8 million that we use for incentives. Most states in the country have some sort of motion picture incentive program. And it's really the only way to have a film industry in your state these days, because the incentives are what drive the business.
Yeah. So talk to us, I mean, how do you see your role here during Sundance? I guess it's like they're all coming to you. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, huh? It's fantastic. I talked to other film commissions who are extremely jealous of the fact that 50,000 of our customers come to my back door. Sundance has always been a great platform for film, and this is really our chance to show that Utah is not only a place for film exhibition, but a place for film production.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you have a lot of meetings during the 11 days of Sundance?
Yeah, we do a lot of, we host a few events. We hosted a great event at the Utah Film Studio on Monday for both incoming, you know, out-of-state industry as well as our local industry, a chance for people to get to know each other and kind of tell the Utah story. But we also target specific filmmakers that we think are a great fit for Utah. I mean, $8 million sounds like a lot of money, but when you look at other states that we compete with regularly, New Mexico has a $50 million incentive. Vancouver spends about $400 million a year. California has $300 million. So we really have to be selective when we're talking to filmmakers about who is a good fit here. It's obviously not the giant, you know, blockbuster films. We just can't afford them. And I think we're, especially with Sundance, we're a great fit for independent films. Obviously, we have some television series, which has been great for us. We've had Yellowstone here in Summit County and Andy Mack through Disney Channel for the last couple of years.
Yeah. So any connections, though, made at these events that you've hosted?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, people love Utah for its locations. They love it for, you know, how easy it is to get in and out, and people are super friendly, and we are still very interested in having film. So I think they see that. There may be other markets out there that are a little weary of the film production because they're so big. And so we've had great conversations with some filmmakers that are very interested in bringing their next production here.
Yeah. So are they doing that, though, because of the possibility of getting some of that $8 million? Or is it that they just feel like they want to work in Utah?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, we can't compete on our incentive alone. But what makes us competitive are our locations. We have some very unique looks. We also have, you know, Everytown USA, you know, Ogden's 25th Street and Payson downtown have been great examples of places that film productions have used in the last couple of years as just sort of a, you know, downtown Main Street. And but we also have that incentive program that sort of cinches the deal.
Yeah. So that $8 million that you have, I think there's hope that you can convince the state legislature to increase that this. I mean, have you made any inroads towards that?
There's definitely interest from the industry. There's been a couple of articles lately that have really industry has expressed an interest in growing the incentive. And currently, you know, the Utah Film Commission is not looking to make any requests of the legislature, but I think industry are out there talking to people.
Yeah, so you haven't had any lawmakers step up to say, I'll help you here?
You know, with 2 days in, we're sort of early in the process. So we'll see. And legislative session, as we all know, can get kind of nuts. So
So some of the events that you've hosted, you said, at the Utah Film Studio. Mm-hmm. How is that facility making a difference?
You know, it's a great facility. Filmmakers love it. It's obviously, it's unique to be in a brand new studio. Most of the studios out there that are commonly used have been around for a long time. So I think filmmakers are impressed by the newness, and it's a beautiful space. And obviously it's been they've been very busy for the last couple of years with Yellowstone. So it did definitely help us get Yellowstone because they needed that big studio space. And they've been great partners.
Yeah. So has Yellowstone basically eaten up that $8 million?
They took a big chunk, yes. Disney with Andy Mack and also High School Musical, they're starting the series in a couple of weeks. They definitely contributed to eating up that those dollars that we have.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it basically spent for 2019 as well?
Yeah, it's hard to guess, and I always hate that question. We get that a lot. You know, people call and say, what do you have left? Because of the way that we hold incentives, once we approve a project, we put those in a, you know, a space to hold them. But then once a production finishes, so things that we approved last year, just finishing production and submitting their audit, they may not have spent everything that they thought they did, or they may not qualify for everything that we held. And so money starts trickling back in small chunks. But yes, overall, we've had some great big productions here that have taken the lion's share.
Yeah. So what other projects are coming to Utah besides those that you just mentioned?
So High School Musical starts up in a couple of weeks. We also were really excited about a film called Werewolf that is brought to us by an independent director, Jim Cummings, who won the short film prize here a couple of years ago with his film called Thunder Road. And then he made a feature out of that film and they won South by Southwest. So lots of talent. He's excited about shooting in Utah. He's wanted to do something here. We actually met him at the festival a couple of years ago. So, you know, that's that sort of long game that you play where you find a filmmaker you like and you track them and you start talking to them about why Utah. And we often see that come to fruition a couple of years down the road.
Yeah, so back to the Utah Film Studios. I mean, they've got plans to, that's really just the start of it. Is there more production facilities scheduled to still come online?
I think they have talked about that. I know I've seen, discussions about phase 2 and 3, mm-hmm. what they're wanting to do out there. So it'll be good to see what they come up with.
Okay. Hey, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I just hope people are out there seeing films. There's lots of good stuff this year.
Okay. Hey, Virginia, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Virginia Pierce is the Executive Director of the Utah Film Commission. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:24. Good morning. Joining me now in the studio, I have Park City Council Member Nan Wall. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yesterday, Council saw the new design the revised design, I guess, for the Woodside Phase 2 development. This is, again, between Woodside Avenue and what? Up to
Empire.
Empire. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we're talking about how many units?
60 affordable units and then 6 market rate units.
Okay. In terms of you mentioning you didn't like the density of the project, you think it's too dense or?
I do. And Leslie, this is something I really struggle with because I totally support affordable housing. We want and need our essential workers in town, you know, not only to have them be part of the community, but also to give us diversity and give us a different, you know, feel so it's not just kind of one dimensional here in town. On the flip side of that, hardly a week goes by that I don't have a conversation with a resident about growth. And here we are talking about putting, you know, a really dense project right here in town. So for me, it's a struggle. You know, yes, we need the affordable housing, but we have a lot of residents that are very concerned about the amount of infill we're doing and the amount of growth that we're having. So as it moves forward to the Planning Commission, I hope that those residents make their voices heard as with the master plan development, because I think that's an important consideration.
Yeah, so what are we doing? Building some underground parking for them?
Yeah, the affordable units will have underground parking. And all of the affordable and attainable units will enter off of Woodside. And then the 6 market rate units will enter off of Empire.
Yeah. I guess what would you prefer to see? I mean, is there a number that you think makes sense there? That's hard to say.
It's really hard to say, yeah. When we first saw it last March, I think, I felt like it didn't really fit with the character of the neighborhood, and so I asked to see a streetscape. And to the credit of Method Design and staff, they went back and really looked at it, because I, you know, at the time I said I felt like, well, it looks like college dorms right here. And they went back and reworked it, and I think it fits much better into the streetscape. But it still is a really dense project, and people need to be aware of that.
Yeah, and Agora, of course, surrounded by historic homes in some cases, and we're talking about what, a three-story?
Two three-story buildings, kind of in the center of the project.
Yeah, one of Councilmember Becca Gerber's concerns was walkability in that area. Mayor Bierman said that really depends on the development that happens at the base there of Park City Resort. So are we still talking about some kind of transit center there? Or, I mean, are those negotiations still going on? Because they were with the former owner where you had that memorandum of understanding.
Yeah, at this point in time, I think we're waiting to find out who their developer is and then move forward from there. So those conversations really haven't happened yet with the new developer for the base area. What I like about the design is that there's connectivity from City Park. You can cross Main Street, and then there's a public walkway through Woodside One, Project One, which will have 12 affordable units. You cross Woodside, and then you walk through this new project. There'll be a public access, public walkway through there that will take you all the way up to Empire Avenue. Once you get up to Empire Avenue, there's not a crosswalk or anything. So I really do agree that something needs to be worked there so that you can just continue that right on to the resort. So literally you could walk from City Park all the way up to the resort.
Yeah, so we're talking underground or a tunnel or an overpass at that point? Or
on Empire?
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, I don't know. Yeah. Those conversations haven't happened yet.
Okay. Let's see. So in the meantime, then, before we decide what happens with the resort, I mean, how do we make that safe?
Well, Woodside 2 won't start its construction until next summer, at the earliest, the end of next summer. And so we're talking a couple years out, so hopefully by then we'll know, kind of have a better idea of what the resort is planning for its base area and how that can all work together.
Yeah. So usually projects like this go to the Planning Commission first and then get final approval from the council. I mean, why did it come to you before we're sending it back to Planning Commission?
I think because they wanted just to give us the overall concept and design last March, and then I asked that it come back so we could see the streetscape.
Okay. So you weren't, it wasn't like any decision, it just
No,
now,
not yeah. at all. It okay. was just showing us the concept and asking for our input.
Yeah. So now it goes before Planning Commission.
Now they'll do the construction documents and then submit the master plan development, and then that will go to Planning Commission.
Okay. With the final decision, or will it eventually come back to council?
Planning Commission will make that decision, and then I believe it comes to council for final approval.
Okay. Let's see. Assistant City Manager Matt Dias presented a report from the first few days of this year's legislative session. He mentioned your interest in tracking mental health and wellness bills. Anything that you'd like to see from the state level on that front?
Aaron Newman, who's the director of our local Mental Wellness Alliance, is very involved in the legislative efforts and is, in fact, down there this morning at a committee hearing. They're very concerned about losing funding for drug court. And with the initial Medicaid expansion bill that was passed by the voters, there was no funding required. The way that it's being reworked is there's going to be maybe up to $15 million required. And so that money has to come from somewhere. And one of the areas that it's suggested to come from is drug court funding.
So the state doesn't see the benefit of that, or they maybe just don't know about it at this point?
I think that's part of the discussion. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other bills that you've got your eyes on?
They have a list of mental health bills that they're concerned about and want to make sure that funding, again, doesn't get cut for mental health services and substance abuse services in the state. So they're very involved in that. But it's only day number two of the session, and I think there's already like 1,000 bills that are there, and several more will still come in. So it's a little bit early, but those are the ones that they're really watching.
Okay. Well, we're kind of on the other side of the hump with Sundance Film Festival. Mayor Bierman described it as controlled chaos. So what's your takeaway from this year's festival so far?
I unfortunately was out of town for the first weekend of it. I had to attend a friend's birthday party out of state, and so I missed it. But from all reports from friends that were here, I think controlled chaos is a pretty good description of it.
Yeah. Let's see. Also, in other business, the council refunded, there was the reissuance of some general obligation bonds to refund those. Basically, what, to save a bunch of money?
Yeah. If we still have 6 years left on some 15-year general obligation bonds. And so by refinancing them and putting them in with the bonds for Treasure that are about to be sold, then we can save, it's estimated we're going to save about $272,000 in interest payments.
Okay, just better interest rate. Is that how it
mm-hmm.
works?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when's Treasure expected to close? Coming up here?
I believe in April. I'm not sure of the final date. I know that the bonds are going to be put on the market on February 20th.
Okay. Let's see. What about the land management code amendments for the historic district? These were discussed earlier this month. Council's still not going to take action on them?
Well, we did on changes to steep slope permits. We took action on those last night. When they first came to council a week or so ago, it was just overwhelming. We had 105 pages in one report, and then we had like 125 in another one of the reports. And so we asked the staff come back kind of with smaller chunks that we could look at individually. So we looked last night at making changes to steep slope permit process and making more of those administrative, you know, from the Planning Commission standpoint. A lot of times staff knew that it meant all of the, you know, crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's and met all the requirements within the land management code, yet it still had to come to Planning Commission. So they're just streamlining that process a little bit for the applicant as well as for the Planning Commission.
Okay. I mean, as a longtime member of the Planning Commission, you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's see. Also, last council meeting of the month, and then we return to the Thursday schedule? Is that the plan?
We do. We return to the Thursday schedule. Next week is our council retreat on Thursday and Friday, February 7th and 8th. And that will be at the Park City Library in the third floor. That agenda has not been published yet. The staff's still working with the mayor to put some final touches on it, and then it'll be published. We welcome the public to come. It's an open session.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Just want to thank all of the volunteers for Sundance. Today is Volunteer Appreciation Day for Sundance. So many thanks to you, as well as to all of the hundreds of other volunteers that make this festival possible.
All right, Nan, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's Park City Council Member Nan Worrell. It's 8:41. Good morning. Well, as part of Park City's social equity priority, Diego Zagara, the social equity director for the Park City Community Foundation, has come up with an idea for a book club as a way to explore the issue of social equity. He joins me now in the studio along with Park City Librarian Katrina Kamak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Diego, let's start with you and just give us a little bit of background here. Park City Council, of course, naming social equity as one of its critical priorities. The Community Foundation was awarded, I believe, a $100,000 grant, basically to do what?
Our role for the next year is in collaboration with the city to create a multi-year strategic plan to address issues that the community identifies that are important and pertaining to social equity.
Okay, and do we have a definition now of social equity?
You know, there's a certain ineffability to it because it means something different to each group, and we are working towards a vision statement. I believe we're getting closer, and at the core of this, I think, is inclusivity. People having access to resources, feeling welcome and valued. So I believe it'll shape up a little bit that way.
Okay. At what point does the public start getting involved in this conversation?
Thanks for asking. Tuesday, February 26th, we will be hosting a community forum at the Blair Education Center at 6 p.m. That is Tuesday, February 26th, and we encourage and invite everyone to come and join us, give us their feedback, thoughts, insight on this. We will have one of our elected officials joining us, hopefully Mayor Bierman, to tell us a little bit about the impetus the city has behind this, and then the Community Foundation team will be speaking to the work that is going on.
Okay. Well, then tell us a little bit more about this idea for a book club. I think you had posted something on Facebook. And talk to me a little bit about how a book club has anything to do with social equity.
Well, it started a few months ago. When we were awarded the contract, I realized people in the community wanted to talk about this. They had questions. They were stopping me at the grocery store and saying, hey, do you have a minute? And I said, sure. I really enjoy talking about it. And I thought, what if we were to provide an avenue, a specific outlet for people to connect on this issue, people that may not know each other, and then frame that with a book, a very specific theme, a very specific track, and then come together once a month to talk about issues of diversity, equity, inclusion that revolve around social equity.
Okay. So then you've kind of connected with the library, and I mean, who came up with the book titles?
Well, it's interesting. Since the Park City Community Foundation was awarded this money and funding, we started talking initially just about how there's so many different books and titles that are so inclusive, and especially in the past like 5 years especially, so many books by diverse authors, so many books with diverse characters, so many nonfiction books that are bringing all of this up. So we were in communication together. I sent a bunch of titles over their way, and then Diego had come up with the handful of titles, and I was like, we would love to provide some copies of these books for you guys. So we purchased a handful of books. We have some in our book club collection, and it just seems to make sense. You know, libraries are all about intellectual freedom and anybody learning anything they want to at any given time. So it seemed very sensible.
Okay. So the book club, what, meets monthly? I mean, just give us kind of the
You know, everyone is a little oversubscribed. And in fact, some people are joining their second or third book club. So I thought once a month was great. Additionally, down the line, it might look a little different. We might have a podcast, we might have a movie, we might have shorter books, just so that more people can participate. This initial book was a few hours long to read, probably. And our first meeting is this coming Monday. There's about 52 people that have expressed interest. And Leslie, at first I thought it would just be a handful of my friends joining out of pity primarily, but just so I wouldn't have a solo book club. But I was greatly pleased to see how many people were interested in this. And I want to give props to the library for so quickly saying we would love to partner on this. I'd say I handpicked the initial three books, but from now on, I'm looking for a collaboration with Katrina and the library to make a list that includes a variety of views and topics and issues.
All right.
Well, I was just going to say, I think books are just a beautiful segue to kind of personalize and make this very broad issue a little more personal. You know, like when you're reading a book, the empathy, maybe it's just me, that I tend to feel when reading these books about very sensitive issues kind of brings it home a little more. So I think it's a lovely way to make this broad topic accessible.
Okay. Looks like a pretty hefty book to get done by Monday. But tell us what you're reading.
The book is called Winners Take All. The author is Anand Giridharadas, and he was a former writer for the New York Times. It's a very thought-provoking and compelling read on power sharing, the state of philanthropy, how we allocate power and how we distribute charity money, so to speak. And that's part of it, but it really explores broad systems issues.
Yeah, so it's kind of subtitled The Elite Charade of Changing the World. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good? Is it interesting or is it more on the dry side?
It is fascinating. I would say I've read it 1.5 times and I've listened to it once as well. It's got really useful and practical lessons, and especially for the work that we do at the Community Foundation, I found it particularly pertinent.
Okay, so you're meeting Monday. Where and when?
We're meeting at Squatters at 5:30, and initially, I would say we're pretty full. I would like to consider after this time seeing if it's possible and viable to open it up to the whole community. Right now, with the 52 people admittedly in my orbit that have expressed interest, I think we'll have a full bar area on Monday.
Mm, okay. So maybe next month.
Maybe next month. Yes, let's call this one a pilot, mm-hmm. and seeing how it goes. If there's interest beyond that, then we can definitely consider that.
Yeah. So have you read the book, this one,
I
Katrina?
Have just started it, mm-hmm. and holy cow.
Do you think it's representative? I mean, a good book to discuss the issue of social equity?
Well, absolutely. You know, as social equity is such a broad topic, there's so many different facets of it, and I think this is one avenue that I think Park City can definitely, what's the word I'm looking for, like recognize or associate with, you know, and some of the people who might, I don't want to generalize, but I think the question of like, what is social equity? What does this look like here? You know, we have many foundations and lots of nonprofits and people with lots of money who do participate in this community heavily. And I think this is an excellent avenue for that.
Okay. So if people do want to participate, what else do you have on the agenda there for books?
So, well, okay. Thanks for putting me on the spot. I'll announce next month's book at this point. And if people would like to join us, the library has ordered a few extra copies, mm-hmm. so more can join. The book is called Born a Crime, Tales from a South African Childhood by comedian Trevor Noah. And it is a lighter read that deals with issues of race and diversity. And I think that the community will really enjoy it. And I think the themes will change month to month.
Yes.
Some months it might be about LGBTQ+ issues. Some months it'll be about race. Some months it'll be about gender. And I hope that we can build a tent large enough for people to see themselves identified in it.
Okay. And then do you want to mention the next book that you've got on the list?
As in?
The third month? Because you picked three, you said, yeah?
Yeah. So the book that we're going to be addressing in March is called We Should All Be Feminists, mm-hmm. by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. It is a short one, so I am looking at adding a little something extra on the side, maybe a podcast, maybe a film to complement the conversation.
Okay. And then in terms of what the library is going to do, you said bring in, I mean, what are we talking, 3, 5, a dozen books?
So we do have Born a Crime by Trevor Noah. We have that in our book club collection. So I believe we already have 10 circulating copies of that, as well as electronic copies that you can access on our app, Libby by Overdrive. There's an ebook and e-audiobook available there. We've made sure that we have a couple copies available, but then we also just purchased books that we don't have cataloged that are just floating around the book club as well, and figure if people are using it, that's great.
Okay. And again, the plan is the first Monday of each month?
Yes, that seems like a good night for now.
Okay. And then the location could change after this first month.
Yeah, I think we'll move it around.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to mention?
I just want to give a shout out to the Community Foundation. They do have some great resources for people who might be wondering what social equity is on their website. They just put out a great newsletter as well. And there's a whole book list on their website that we compiled together, too, that if you're interested in checking out, we got most of the titles at the library.
Thank you, Katrina. I was just going to say that verbatim.
Yeah.
All right, Katrina, Diego, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks, Leslie.